everyone this junk?
And the swirls.
Oh, there's no Ryan. There's no third guy.
Oh.
It's just me and you.
I was wondering where you were pausing.
I was waiting for Ryan, but he didn't show up. I thought he'd walk through the door.
That would be amazing. He just opens up. This is Ryan. That's how you do it.
He sounds just like that.
I know. I've been practicing in the mirror every morning.
That's good. It's interesting that you're doing it in the mirror. Are you picturing yourself as Ryan?
Well, of course. Or else what's the point?
Okay.
I actually have like a little cutout picture of Ryan's face that I hold over my face with all the popsicle stick.
Do you cut off the eyes? Do you cut off the eyes so that...
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But there's something creepy about that.
I can see. I don't want to be blind. I want to see me being Ryan.
You make a Ryan mask out of his own skin.
No, then he'd be dead. That just seems...
Okay, you haven't gotten to that point yet. All right. It didn't take us long to get weird.
Well, on that note... Alright, tune in next week, everybody.
This is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. Did I say that already?
I don't think so. It just got creepy. It just started out creepy.
This is the mini show for the month of October 2015, which means we talk about any random games or topics we feel like talking about. And I got a couple of games on tap tonight. I got Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies, Shovel Knight, the Plague of Shadows expansion, as well as Chibi Robo Ziplash. And Wes, you got a book report for us?
Sure.
You got any games you want to talk about?
I started replaying games I've talked about on past podcasts, so it's kind of like, what's the point?
Oh, which ones? Let me think.
Infamous 2.
Okay.
I've been playing a lot more Hearthstone.
Uh-huh.
Final Fantasy 10.
Uh-huh.
And I plan on picking up Fire Emblem Awakening probably tomorrow.
What?
So I have something to do.
This is while
I'm in Sarasota for my mom's wedding.
This is a magical time.
Yeah,
pick a Fire Emblem Awakening.
Finally, pick a Fire Emblem Awakening.
It's so good.
I can't wait.
It's so good.
I'm super excited.
Yes, I'm excited for you because yes, that is the exact right decision at this moment in time. Actually, how far are you in Final Fantasy X?
I am right before Zarakan. I just beat the Seymour on Mount Gagazet.
Okay. Oh, who are you mainly rolling with? Do you have a particular...
Well, I mean, I'm using a little bit of everybody, oddly enough,
yeah.
Which kind of annoys me because I hate using Waka, but he hits harder than Titus.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Titus is fast, and he's got handy moves and everything, but at that point in the game, he actually doesn't hit as hard as Waka.
Hmm.
Waka's attack gets higher quicker.
Are any of his status attacks still useful to you?
No, I haven't. I've used them... I think I'm like unlocking Silence Buster and Sleep Buster. I'm like, never gonna use you, never gonna use you. I'm just doing it for the hell of it.
I mean, it sucks because like the enemies that he's useful like against, most of them, he does kill in one hit, like the flying enemies. So
yeah.
Like blinding them and stuff is pretty useless.
I mean, the only thing you ever really use in the game is the Dark Ones, and that's only against some big guys in the early stages. Like the last time I used it was in the desert. On those giant zoo birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
they actually hit really hard.
Yeah, that's the exact right strategy to use against those zoos. Because if they can't hit you, you'll be fine.
Which still wasn't that big of a deal because Titus had a sword that does dark, so...
Oh, yeah, he had dark touch on his sword?
Yeah, so yeah. I'm like, what the frick? I think I'm blinding everything.
Yeah, I wonder, like, yeah, because most of his usefulness... Is negated by being able to like do dark touch or silence touch. Yeah,
put it on a weapon.
It's true.
Not that big of a deal.
Is the you're playing the HD remake, so the sphere grid is different. Are you still enjoying how that's all set up?
It's fine. It's just different.
Yeah.
Don't really see why they changed it to the way they did. It's kind of like, hey, we can.
Have you wandered into anyone else's spirit grid on accident?
I haven't finished. Well, on accident, yeah, I did that a couple times. But it's not that big of a deal. Just right back.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you'll unlock other people's skills with...
because you instantly take Yuna into Lulu's path when you're done with her.
Mm-hmm. And you'll teach her black magic and all that?
Oh, yeah. And then Lulu becomes pointless.
Right, right.
Which is a shame, because she's like the one character you use the most for the longest of the game.
It's true. Her usefulness is pretty good until someone else can start learning that as well.
Deady damage.
Mm-hmm. Not like Kamari, who becomes really useless real quick.
Yeah, I tried to make him more useful this time through, but he just...
I mean, and it is a shame. It is a shame, because it's one of those things about the game where I really like collecting all of his enemy skills. Yeah. He's the character that uses enemy skills.
But you never really use any of them.
Because that's his overdrive.
Yes.
So it's just kind
of lame. And a lot of them are really pointless. Because by the time you got like Stone Breath, Aqua Breath is not that big of a deal. Because mm-hmm. you could just petrify the enemies instead of doing AoE damage. By the time you get White Wind, you got Yuna, who's just a much better healer anyway, so you're not going to use the White Wind overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
The jump is crap. The seed burst is crap. A lot of them are just a lot very weak one-hit things. The only really useful overdrive he's got is the Bad Breath, the Stone Breath, and Mighty Guard. That's really the only thing decent for him.
He'd be much more useful as a character if
he was more like Quinna.
Yeah, where you could just use those the blue magic skills whenever.
Yeah.
And so like some of them are a little bit overpowering. Like if you just like Bad Breath every enemy that came along.
Constantly, yeah.
So maybe if like there was some sort of meter that he had to build up, and like there are like different levels of the meter. Like one quarter full, he could use a certain like set of skills. Half full, he could use a second set of skills.
That would be interesting. That would be a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Because Quinna got really strong as well when you got the really good moves as well.
Yeah.
Like, she picks up Bad Breath herself, right?
Or I think
the form of that. Because there was Maw Bros in 9.
Yeah, well... Oh, you're talking about... yes, yeah, she... Yeah, you get Bad Breath in 9. It's hard to get.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you do... You almost have to in the point of the game in 9. When, you know, your party's split up into 4 different... You basically have Dagger and Ico going off together, and then... Steiner and Vivi going off and fighting. You're all basically going off to fight 4 boss battles at the same time, and Zidane gets stuck with Quinna, and you have to play through Zidane.
Yeah, if you don't do anything with her, you just get screwed in that fight.
Yeah, you are really, really fucked. It's kind of that rude awakening point, like, hey, you know this character you've been ignoring the whole time, you better shape up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know, for some reason when you mentioned Quinna, I immediately thought Quistis. Who actually from Final Fantasy VIII, who also does have that blue magic enemy skill.
Yeah.
But is that
still not also as good? Also her limit.
Yeah.
Also her limit. Also not that good.
Right.
But I mean, Quinna's the only good blue magic user, and she was lackluster. But
I mean,
abilities were good.
Yeah, in every other facet of the game, I think she's got a bunch of HP so she can soak up some damage. But
7 did a good way of it, where it was a materia,
mm-hmm, which is cool.
That was a good way to do it, but again, everybody is everybody, so it's kind of pointless in 7.
I kind of wish that, I don't know, maybe like in future Final Fantasy games, if they ever make another one I'm interested in playing, like if they do more enemy skill type stuff, I kind of wish there was some sort of indication where... If an enemy has a skill you can learn, it'll let you know at the beginning of a battle. So you're not, like, hunting around trying to... Like, in Final Fantasy IX, you have to eat the, like, different opponents in order to gain their skills. In Final Fantasy VIII, I can't remember how you did it. I think in Final Fantasy VII, it was...
I think Final Fantasy VIII was just kind of random. You just got hit by him. Say it was 7. You just got to get hit by him. Boom, you got it.
Yeah, there's that element.
I think in 10 you can figure it out because you can scan them in 10.
Okay.
In 10 you can scan and be like, hey, this has this move, and usually it's like highlighted blue, and you're like, oh, I got a Lancelet, this douche.
That's right. I remember that now. Yeah. I mean, just getting back to Final Fantasy X. Yeah, it's a shame that they actually did make it a little bit easier to figure out what skills you could get, but then it's not easy to use them. So.
Yeah, they took that away in the later ones. X2 didn't do anything like that. At least I don't remember it doing anything like that.
I don't remember anything in 12.
12, same with that. 13 did not.
Hmm.
13 had an interesting concept, but it just overall failed.
Well,
I probably will replay it again someday, because it looks pretty.
I keep saying that about 12, too, but, you know.
Yeah.
There it is, high up on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, is there any other shots you want to give to Final Fantasy X before we jump into some other stuff here?
Overdrive makes the game too easy.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just max everybody's overdrive for a fight, and then boom, they're dead.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. So I got a few games that I want to go through, do some updates on. I played through Chapter 3 of Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies, And
every single time I hear Duel of Destinies, I always think, is this guy a weird Yu-Gi-Oh game?
I never played any of the Yu-Gi-Oh games.
I didn't. I played one. I forget where I got it. I didn't even pay for it. I forgot how I got my hands on this thing, but it was weird.
Well, it was really dumb. Let's talk about Yu-Gi-Oh video games for a second.
Why? That's a terrible.
It's confusing to me why a video game version of a card game would exist. They did the same thing with the Pokemon trading card game. They made one of those. Hearthstone, does it actually exist in the physical world?
No, it does not.
See, that's the thing. Like, I can understand, like, wanting to play a card game, like an online card game, because you can actually do battles with people at a distance. Like, you can play, you can play other people. When the game like Yu-Gi-Oh, like, there's Game Boy Advance versions of this game where you're doing card battles against computers
the whole game. Did
you play much of the game? Was that basically it?
Yeah. But it didn't really follow the regular rules of the card game. Like, I couldn't follow and I couldn't figure out what to do because it didn't really follow the rules with it. It was very odd.
That's even weirder.
It was very, very odd, the one thing I played of it. They do have a website where you can make decks, and it follows the rules of the actual card game.
Oh, yeah?
And you are playing with other people online.
Hmm.
Except it's really complicating because it's completely computer oriented and everything like that, and the commands are weird and you have to follow it's really complex the way to do it, and it's easy to make a mistake accidentally. Like attacking you're not supposed to, or not being able to do something with a card you're trying to do it, and then I don't know, it was really weird and it just bored the crap out of me.
So I don't even remember why were we talking about.
We were talking about Phoenix Wright.
I wanted to ask you one other thing about the Yu-Gi-Oh game. Like, one of the other appeals of, like, a physical card game, or one that's purely digital, and the Yu-Gi-Oh, it kind of sounds like it's like some sort of nebulous area in between, is your deck construction.
Yeah.
So, in the physical world, you, like, can go hunt these things down. You can buy the ones you want. In Hearthstone, there's, like, that some sort of system where you can earn cards.
In Hearthstone, there is different classes you can be, and then as you level up your classes, you'll unlock a gold version of a class card. You get cards by either paying actual money to open random packs like you would in the real world, or use the money to unlock DLC, which is the whatever the thing is supposed to be called. I forget. I can't even think of it. Or Blackrock. Those are the two DLCs you can do, and you can get, I think, about 30 cards each in those that are unique to those. And then another way is by completing daily quests and winning matches. Like, every 3 matches you win, you get 10 gold. And that gold, or by completing daily quests, you'll get like 40 gold or 100 gold. You can use that to buy packs with that instead of real money. Or do Arena, where it'll give you 3 cards randomly. It'll give you 3 cards, you pick one. The other 2 will go away. You give you a fresh new 3. You pick one. The other 2 will go away until you construct a deck out nothing.
Right,
there.
Right.
You play until you either win 12 rounds or you lose 3, and then you get a random prize based on how well you did. So there's a couple of different things you can do with it to unlock more, or you can disenchant cards and re-enchant them. Like, it's a big ordeal. Like, it's a pain in the butt getting good cards in that game.
With your limited experience with that Yu-Gi-Oh video game, was there any sort of deck construction?
No, it's all free. You just pick whatever one. You just type in the search bar what card you want, and boom, make it. You just get it.
Because
there wasn't. It's different, because there's also Magic the Gathering online, which is the same way, but you have to buy the cards like you would the real world, so you're buying them for the computer online. You're not getting a hard copy.
Right.
And the reason why you got to do that is because they have online tournaments and things like that where you win money and shit.
Okay.
But with Yu-Gi-Oh, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Online website that I found, you don't get anything. You're just playing the game. So you're like, hey, everything's free. There you go. Do your thing.
All right.
Be crazy. Go nuts.
Well, Duel Destinies.
There you go. Let's talk about a lawyer.
Let's talk about this game that is 100% text. This game is as close to a visual novel as I have ever played. So, I don't know if I'm going to move on to chapter 4. I don't know. I'm going to let it. There's a lot of games coming out over the next few weeks. I got Chibi Robo, Legend of Legacy, Triforce Heroes. I might pick up. Yo-Kai Watcher, I might wait until later in the year to grab that. But then on the Wii U, we got Yoshi, we got Xenoblade coming up. There's going to be a lot occupying my time, so I don't think I'm going to have the wherewithal to dedicate more time to Phoenix Wright. And then next year, there's a ton more games. There's a new Fire Emblem. There's a new Mario and Luigi game. Bravely Second is coming up. There's going to be a lot of stuff happening on the 3DS, and I might use that as an excuse to never go back to this. In order to be invested in this game, you have to be really invested in the story and the characters and the absolute insanity surrounding all of them. There's this game gets really batshit nuts with the like different crazy characters. Like there's a girl who lives in a cardboard box and sneaks around in her cardboard box, and she's like a journalist, and she takes like pictures of people, like candid pictures, and like bugs her school, or her lawyer school. She is going to lawyer school, and she is bugging all of the rooms.
Law school?
I mean, it's different in the world of Phoenix Wright, though, because you're not like going to law school in order to learn the law. They're not actually like studying the law. They are learning
how to weird hand gestures and how to point and yell objections.
So yes, here's the thing. The thing with Phoenix Wright. I don't know if they're actually studying the correct way to point and shout objection.
Okay, thank God.
You're going to this lawyer school to either be a lawyer, which is what they basically call the defendant, the defending lawyer. You can be like a public defender, or a whole separate course is how to be a prosecutor. So you can study specifically to be a prosecutor, which I guess is maybe not too insane, because we have people who are like district attorneys whose job it is to prosecute people, and we have people who are public defenders whose job it is to defend people. But I'm pretty sure, and I've never been to law school, but I'm pretty sure when you go to law school, you maybe like have a primary area of focus. Like I'd rather be this, so I'm going to study this aspect of law. But it's not like you're going to be a defender, you're going to be a prosecutor, and never the twain shall meet. Oh, you can also go to be a judge, which I call shenanigans. I don't think you can go to school specifically to be a judge. That might be your goal one day.
Judge school.
But I'm pretty sure you need to learn the law first.
It makes me think of like this weird batshit way of doing like wizarding school of Harry Potter.
I mean, it's not too...
You have your different schoolhouses. You got the prosecutors and the defenders and the judges, and they all rival about winning the house cup.
I would venture the guess that lawyer school in Phoenix Wright is closer to wizard school in Hogsmeade than it is to actual law school. And the thing is, like, when you think of the law, if you've ever watched a goddamn episode of Law and Order, you know that the burden of proof rests entirely on the prosecution. Like, in Phoenix Wright, in these games, not only do you have to prove your defendant is innocent, you also have to find the actual perpetrator of the crime. It's not enough to be like, well, no, the defendant didn't do it because this evidence doesn't make sense. You then, like, they're still presumed guilty until you find the person who actually did it.
Okay, that's a little messed up.
so it's very much a detective game where you have to, like, draw these absurd conclusions and then back it up.
It sounds like
evidence.
The prosecutor's got, like, nothing to do. They just kind of put their feet up and just, like, prosecution house is an easy A course. Take it, trust me.
Right, well, see, that's, sure, I mean, like, most of the prosecutors that I've encountered in the game, I'm basically, there's only been one, maybe two different people who I've encountered as like the opposition, the prosecution. And basically they've been like, yeah, that guy did it. Defend them. And it's entirely up to, and they'll bring up a witness and the witness says, oh yeah, they did it. And then you have to poke holes in the witness defense. Like, no, this witness is a liar. And then that witness is allowed to give more testimony, which you then accept as truth. Like, no, arrest that person for perjury. And then like, even if you show examples of why your defendant is not guilty, if there is reasonable doubt to whether or not they could have committed that crime, it's still like, if the prosecutor goes, well, no, because I have this other evidence that kind of makes sense. Like, well, shit, I guess the defendant did it then. And that's not the way the law works. Anyway, it's a video game. there's a reasonable suspension of disbelief here, but it's a little nuts if you apply any thought to it. Try not to apply any thought.
I really want my brother-in-law to play this now, who...
Is a lawyer?
Is a lawyer.
He should. It'd be interesting to hear that perspective on it.
We'll get him on the show.
So, you know, when this is all, like, basically surface-level stuff. Like, if you can accept, like, just, like, the silliness of it, it really doesn't make a difference. My main problem with the games is that there are just tons of dialogue trees. And I lose all interest in what they're saying. Like, this is a game where you're, like, supposed to be accepting testimony and hearing out what they're saying. And I find myself skipping stuff. Because, like, yeah, whatever.
Well, that's how you are in every game. That's how you are personally as a gamer. You're just like, I don't care. Tell me who I gotta stab in the face. Right, that's all I gotta know.
This might not have been a good match. And see, I don't have a problem, like, navigating menus. Like, I'll play RPGs, which is nothing but menu navigation.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
all right, I want to fight. I want to use an item. And I'm going to scroll through all the items I have. It's
perfectly fine for you, but you don't give a shit about actual... Like, even the story of games, you just don't give a shit about.
Not even a little bit.
I do. And it's like the first time through.
Oh, there's also this part. So basically you have, like, your trial sequences and you have your investigation sequences. So in your investigation, you're going through menus again. You're going to different locations. And then you're pixel hunting for pieces of evidence scattered along the ground because the police are not present, and if they are, they don't do their goddamn jobs. There is this police detective in this game, and he calls himself a police detective, but basically he works for the prosecution. So all the evidence he's finding, he is giving directly to the prosecution and not letting you fucking see it.
Which is not how it works.
No. No. This is not the way
to find your own. I gave him donuts this morning. I'm his favorite.
there's also like these kind of mini games. So there's one lawyer in this game.
Please tell me it's a card game.
No.
Damn it.
That would be kind of cool. Give us another excuse to talk about card games on this show.
Final Fantasy VIII had a wonderful card game.
Indeed it did. Indeed it did. So, and I mean, if you think about it, like. Although those kind of sort of PlayStation era, like PS1, PS2 era Final Fantasy games, each had like these really time-absorbing mini-games, except for 9. So in Final Fantasy 7, you had the submarine game.
Yep.
In Final Fantasy 8, you had the card game. In Final Fantasy 10, you had Blitzball. In Final Fantasy 9, it was just like, I mean, there's these cards you can play if you want. There was that one part in Final Fantasy 9 where you had to play cards, which was annoying as fuck. Mm. But...
I mean, I played a little bound of it. The one thing about Final Fantasy VIII card game that I hated was when you lose and you say goodbye to your nice card. And you
it's
go,
true.
Fuck, now I gotta play this guy 30 times to get my Ifrit back.
Right. Yeah, that you always want to save before you start engaging in card battles.
Oh my god.
I also didn't like how then all these random rules would start spreading all over the place, and I think there was a way to sort of
different regions.
Yeah.
It was interesting how they did that. Like, different areas had different rules and blah blah blah. But that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
you gotta figure that shit out.
Right, and then, like, if there's a rule you didn't like if you didn't want to play with, like, elemental stuff or whatever, then there's, like, these really roundabout ways where you could basically switch them off. But it would just be kind of cool if you could challenge someone and say, okay, well, what rules do you want to play with? And sort of have that phase where, like, well, let's play with this, but not this. Or, like, well, you have to select 3 rules to play with. I don't know. We need to put, like, these Final Fantasy games in the Pantheon so we shut up about them. But, like, there's these mini games in Dual Destinies where, like, there's the one lawyer, the girl lawyer, and she's got a necklace, and she has this, like, she has, psychoanalyst superpowers. She's like a psychologist as well as a lawyer, and she can tell when people are like having weird emotions.
Please tell me she's also a palm reader.
Maybe in the fourth case. Maybe in the fourth case we'll learn more. But she
was a ghost whisperer.
You play this mini game where basically you're going through their testimony and you're just tapping on 4 different emojis. Of like, well, they're saying this, but their emotions are doing that, and that doesn't make sense. So you tap it, and then you're like, hey, your emotions don't make sense. And then their testimony changes. And then, like, the other lawyer that you play as a lot, Apollo, what's his lawyer superpower? Oh, he's got a bracelet, and his superpower bracelet will tell him when someone is lying or hiding the truth or something, and then you kind of have to like probe it out of them somehow. I can't remember exactly how that mini game works. Anyway, all of this stuff,
he has a superpower bracelet,
right? In the world of lawyer school,
all right.
Anyway,
it gets to the point where you just kind of accept it.
Well, all the characters have their gimmicks, and actually, like the playable characters in this game, their gimmicks are far tamer. Then
now, do you get to pick which one you want to be, or does it like change by case?
It's case by case.
It's
literally case by case. But 90% of the gameplay here is just revolving around picking the text box that you want to present. So the game, you know, it's got nice like looking character models. The art style is really cool. It can be well written at times, in a really zany way. It has good music, and the dialogue might be witty at times. But in a video game, I think it's important that your input and how you're interacting with the game has some sort of impact on what's happening. And clicking text boxes, I don't know, that I don't think that's enough to actually qualify as a video game. It's more like a choose your own adventure book than it is a video game.
Yeah, pretty much.
By the way, well designed games, just by way of example, well designed games. Tell me if you agree or disagree. Would require a player to master certain skills that they teach you.
Yes.
They give you the equipment and opportunity to be able to master. They put you in situations, yes, to where you can master those skills before you're really demanded to use them effectively.
Yes.
And then they also find new ways to use the skills that they've taught you. Like, sure, it's not just like, oh, you have a bow and arrow, just shoot enemies with them. It's like, well, you have a bow and arrow, and you can also shoot that eyeball on the wall to open things up. Or you can combine them with this fire. I'm just using Zelda examples here. You can shoot them through the torch in order to burn something far away from you. They find different uses to use the things that you have. And then also, of course, have understandable mechanics and techniques that work reliably so that the game is not broken. Dual Destinies does one of these things. And I'm not trying to say that this is not a good product. It's definitely not a product that I enjoy. I just think that if you've never played one of these games before and you're not familiar with them, I think you just need to be aware that this is really not a video game in a technical sense. I'm also not saying that this product shouldn't exist. I think there's plenty of room in the 3DS library for stuff like this. I don't think that it's out of place on the 3DS. I think that there's plenty of room on the gaming system for all different types of media and formats. Like, if somebody wanted to make an ebook and put it out on the 3DS, sure, fine, whatever. That sounds fine to me. If somebody wanted to make some sort of like web series that was exclusive to a 3DS cartridge, and that's the only way you could watch the web series, I would kind of question why they would want to do that. But
yeah,
I don't,
sure, more power to you.
Yeah, I don't care. I just think that people need to be aware of the products that they are potentially buying. So if you really like games with lots of gameplay, Phoenix Wright is not one of those things.
How about one of these law games, except it is a sequel to a dating scam that ends with divorce lawyers.
Phoenix Wright divorce lawyer.
Yep.
I like that.
And it just like takes care of all the dating sins about.
I mean, if this were like some
but
sort
the
of
romance has ended.
If they were to take like an angle like that, like this is a civil trial between two parties, like people getting divorced.
Like Mario and Peach. Or
sure, yeah.
They have falling out.
Then like there would sort of be this really this sort of, I think it would be, have more flexibility to have that sort of loose litigation process of like bringing in psychiatry and untrustworthy testimony. Because, you know, if you have like lawyers mediating a divorce dispute, you're not necessarily in front of a judge the whole time, like, or maybe even at all. You could like have settlements out of court and things like that. I think that, you know, that might lend itself a little bit better to the really ridiculous things that go on in this game. But, you know, if you really like the crazy and you're really into reading, then this is, you know...
Here you go.
Something you could try.
Here you go.
I got a couple more games. So we've been going for about a half hour, so let's take a quick break and then come back. So I played a little bit more of Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows. I talked about this one on the official show a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I was pretty positive on it then. Still pretty positive on it. No, I am.
It took a turn for the worse. It just got terrible. Absolutely atrocious. I don't know why I was.
I actually might be a little bit more positive now than I was at the time. I think it's definitely an acquired taste. You definitely get used to the way Plague Knight moves around. And then the way the levels are built. For example, I was playing through the Plague Knight stage, and I died a bunch of times playing through start to finish. And then I wanted to post something. I guess I shouldn't be vague about this. I should just go ahead and say spoilers for Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows for the next, 5 minutes or so. So go ahead and skip ahead if you haven't played it yet and you really don't want to be spoiled on this, but...
You can just add in the exact amount of time.
I'm not going to.
Like, come back at blah, blah, blah.
I'm not going to, though. I'm posting this show tomorrow. I'm hoping not to do an extensive amount of editing, so don't say anything racist. Don't.
Damn white people.
Yeah, okay, you can be racist against white people. So in Plague of Shadows, you're basically playing, I think I mentioned this on the official show, you're basically playing in a parallel story to Shovel Knight. So when you're entering like the town, you can see Shovel Knight running around and you're kind of below because you're running around in the sewers. When you play the Plague Knight stage, you of course are Plague Knight, you're the boss of that stage, and get to the end, it actually starts up the fight between you and Shovel Knight in the Shovel Knight version of the game. So he's the boss that you're fighting, and of course I guess it's sort of it's like following the exact same story as it would have played out in the in Shovel Knight, the non Plague of Shadows version.
So of course you lose.
Well, you win. Sort of. So basically, you win the fight by beating Shovel Knight. It goes to the animation, and your Plague Knight is collecting these items, these MacGuffins from all of the knights in the game. So he's going up, he's beating up the other villains, and he also takes something from Shovel Knight. But then, as he's like celebrating his victory, Shovel Knight gets up and smacks him with his shovel, and then takes his thing back and runs off. And then you see Shovel Knight by his campfire at night sleeping, like you would in the Shovel Knight version of the game. And Plague Knight sneaks up, takes it back, and sneaks away. So, I can't even remember what I was going to post, but I was going to post something funny and clever onto Miiverse. So I was like, I got a joke to tell. And then I got sidetracked because some people had commented on some of my Mario Maker courses.
Anything good?
Yeah, mostly good stuff. Actually, and I'll post in the show notes, I have 4 more courses available. They're much easier this time around. I made some easy stuff, and I got 4 more courses in the works, which will probably post in November. Anyway, Shovel Knight. So I got sidetracked by Mario. I went back, and I couldn't remember why it entered Miiverse in the first place. And then one of the babies did something, and I can't remember what it was.
Doing baby things.
Yeah, babies being babies.
Climbed on something and fell.
So I turned off the Wii U. So I lost my progress of beating that stage, which I must have died 10 or 15 times through that entire stage. And when I went, as soon as I turned off my Wii U, I was like, oh, fuck. I was in the middle of a game, and I doubt it saved. So I checked on the babies. I turned it back on. Babies turned out to be fine. It was just, you know, your typical two-year-old shenanigans. And I turned it back on. I was like, well, maybe it did an auto-save, like, right after I beat the level. And no, it sure didn't. So I had to beat the whole level again.
Does the Wii do that?
Well, I mean, games don't typically do that, you know? That's just not
if you're playing on the Pikachu, it does.
Shut the fuck up. Seriously? Like, it'll, like, go into a suspend mode?
It won't be suspend, it'll save. Like, autosave. There's a lot of games autosave on a...
Like, in the middle of a cutscene?
Well, maybe not in the middle of a cutscene, but...
That's kind of what was going on, like, a really 8-bit sense.
Yeah, but you're not going to have to, like, redo the whole level in certain cases. In certain cases, yeah,
well,
but...
see, that was the thing. It was kind of frustrating, because there are games that will... do like a quick save at a checkpoint, and Shovel Knight has checkpoints, and it would have been cool if it would at least taken me back to the most recent checkpoint. But the way Shovel Knight works is, no, it's only saving after levels, so you're not you can't, like, even if, like, you're playing the game and you intend to, like, turn it off in the middle of a level, you can't save in the middle of that level.
Like Infamous, for instance, like, if you're in the middle of a mission and you turn it off, you'll lose your progress on that mission, but right up until you hit accept on the mission to go and start it, it'll autosave. You don't have to, like, you don't have to be able to save.
Oh, yeah, that's the exact same thing then. Like, every time in Shovel Knight, anytime you exit back out to the world map, you get an autosave.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. So, I hadn't gotten back out to the world map yet before I stupidly turned it off. So, anyway, the point of this story was that when we're deeper into 5 minutes of the spoiler territory here.
Okay, give us another 5 minutes, guys.
Sorry, let's just say they magically tuned back in exactly at that second. So basically, well, I think I passed the spoiler part. Anyway, basically, I had to go back to through the entire level that I died 10 or 15 times, beat it one time through. So the point is, you get used to the way it works. Once you're kind of used to the way the level is structured out, it's much easier.
5 days later, the point we originally were trying to make.
Yeah, I beat the level in one try. That was the point. Because you get acquainted with the way the levels work, the way Plague Knight moves, what different weapons you're supposed to be using at different times. So it all works out pretty well. And that's actually one of the interesting things about the game is all the different bomb types that you can mix and match with different fuses and different powders to all get these different effects. It would be kind of cool, and one of my only complaints about the game is you're in and out of that menu a lot when you're trying to mix up different bomb types for different situations. It'd be kind of cool if they use, like, if they had, like, slots for, like, custom sets that you've done that you really like. Like, let's just say three. You have three bomb mixes that you really like that you want to save. And then it'd be cool if you could just kind of scroll through them actually in the game using the shoulder buttons. I think you can do that, but with, like, the special moves. So your bomb is your main attack. Your special moves do things like drain health from enemies. It gives you, like an uppercut punch that'll also give you, like, a fourth jump. So I think you can scroll through those. I've never really tried. But that's what I hear. It'd be kind of cool if you could swap that out and have different bomb sets that you like so that you can switch between different bombs on the fly without having to go mix and match different fuses and powders and stuff. Anyway, I still think that this game is best in small doses, like one level at a time, because of how frustrating it can be dying over and over again. Because Plague Knight, like I said before, he doesn't move as well as Shovel Knight. So getting through the levels and getting used to the way all the obstacles are set up is definitely more of a task than it was in Shovel Knight. So this is definitely something that if you have Shovel Knight, you should be trying. If you don't have Shovel Knight, you should get it because it's very good. And it's free, so there's no reason not to try it. And there's more free stuff coming. They're doing more DLC for two more characters.
Hmm.
I kind of feel bad for them, Yacht Club, because I feel like they're going to be making this game forever. And all the stuff they're putting out is free. So, I'll have to have, day jobs and stuff now or something.
I see the guy at McDonald's.
Or,
the counter.
An insurance salesman or something. I made Shovel Knight. We promised too much in the Kickstarter, so now... He's, a ski instructor on the side.
if you promise so much with Shovel Knight, you're going to have a bad time.
I see what you did there. That's good. That's good. All right, let's move over to Chibi-Robo Ziplash, which came out 2 days ago at time of recording. 3 days ago, at the time of the post. Yeah, yeah. And actually, we're gonna be posting this show the day before Legend of Legacy comes out. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be good. I'm excited.
The Legend of Legacy.
We've talked about this. Yes.
I love it so much.
Synonyms.
I love it so much.
The Chronicling of Lineage. Yes, that's what this game is.
The history of
history, right?
All right, I guess that got worse.
Chibi-Robo Ziplash is a game that you should not believe the reviews, because the reviews are giving it like fives and sixes, and this game is actually pretty good. I was a little bit
I was expecting that to go a different route.
Right. Right.
No, I was expecting you to say, "Don't believe the reviews. This is shit."
That's exactly what. How things usually start, isn't it? But this is a game where I played the first couple levels. Actually, let me start over. Let me start at the beginning, because I think
it's a good place to start.
Yeah, I was on my phone at work. The day was winding down, so I was just kind of browsing the internet. I was browsing the mobile version of IGN, and it was like, and I usually don't ever read or look at reviews, but it was like, "Hey, Chibi-Robo Ziplash review." I was like, "Oh, I'm about to buy that game. Let's click on this." And like every other person in the world, I immediately scroll down to the score, because that's what you do when you're reading a review. You don't actually read the text. You read the last paragraph and you look at the score, usually in reverse order. Right? If you ever look at a review.
Well, now and then I'll look at book reviews, but briefly, like on Amazon, okay, to see if this is something I want to spend my money on to read.
Like user reviews?
Yeah, like yeah, people who have read it, they're on Amazon, because I read everything through my Amazon Kindle.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Like a normal person.
Like a normal person. So I read the book description first off, which is normally found on the back of a paperback book.
Uh-huh.
Except it's there one.
And a paperback book, for all the kids listening, that's like a printout.
Yes. Of what you... Yeah. Oh, dear God, it's gotten to that point. And then, you know, on the bottom, there's like people who read this, like, "Hey, this is a good book. I give it 4 stars, or... Like, for instance, I read the book Blood Song.
Also, for the kids listening, don't listen to our last two Pokemon shows.
Don't do it. Oh, my God.
Okay, anyway, continue.
Like, for instance, I read the book Blood Song, and I thought, this is all right. And then I took a look at the reviews for the next books, and because I wasn't sure if I wanted to bother with the other ones. And then after seeing the reviews, I'm like, nope, I'm going to skip them, because that is terrible.
Well, when was the last time you looked at a video game review?
Oh, I don't even bother. If I'm gonna spend it like as a new game, I'm going to watch like trailers for it, or maybe a little bit of gameplay that is released, and be like, "All right, this is something I want to be."
Well, a lot of times, and let's take that tangent. A lot of times, you have to watch a little bit of gameplay, because so much of trailers is just
weird cinematics that actually has nothing to do with the actual gameplay. Yes, right. Exactly.
There was a game.
I'm not trying to watch a movie. I'm trying to play a game. This is different.
Yeah. There was a game, and it might have even been Legend of Legacy, or it might have been Heroes of Magna.
History of Stories?
Yeah.
That doesn't work as well. I'm trying to figure out something to go with history.
Anyway, aside from the Chronicling of Lineage, I think
I like that one. I like that one a lot.
So... I can't remember the game it was, but basically the trailer was all...
That's the sequel.
it was all like cutscenes and stuff, or character portraits. It was a 3DS game, so there weren't a whole ton of cutscenes, so there was a lot of character portraits. And I couldn't find anything about the battles, since it's an RPG, so I wanted to know something about the battles, because that is the game, basically.
That's what you're doing, yes. 85% of the time, other than reading their whiny backstory.
Right. So... You've been playing Final Fantasy X, I can tell.
Your brother died, and so you did crappy at a dodgeball tournament. Boo!
Oh, that is delightfully heartless. That's amazing.
Is that the reason why your hair is so stupid?
I mean, let's
his
face
hair
it.
Is terrible.
Let's
going to a tangent with our tangent.
Yeah, we're going to another Final Fantasy. We do it every week now. We always talk about Final Fantasy X. The not really, Yuna is not really the protagonist, I suppose, but she's kind of like the center of everything that's going on. She is going to sacrifice herself.
Yes.
And everyone else is sad that that dude's brother died and that he's bad at dodgeball?
Don't they say the entire time that she's going to sacrifice herself? They just have made peace with it prior to the jury.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they made peace with it because then it...
Struggling with it, but they're still respecting her wishes and everything.
I don't know. It just kind of seems like, yeah, you're
going to help culture, her friend John.
Kill yourself.
It's a different culture.
Different time. Different time, yeah. It's back when... deadbeat dads could turn into killer whales. so ridiculous.
Okay, that one got me really good. Deadbeat dads turn into killer whales. That's... okay.
Anyway, Chibi-Robo Ziplash. Basically, you shouldn't believe the reviews, because this game is actually really good. I tapped on the IGN review, skipped to the end, they gave it a 5. And it actually got me...
what?
10.
Dear God.
Yeah. And I that prompted me to go to Metacritic. I was like, is this an isolated incident? And most of the stuff I was seeing there was like fives and sixes, six and a halfs, so that kind of thing. Nintendo World Report gave it an 8. I think that's the highest review it's gotten so far. And I think GameSpot gave it a 4, which is the lowest it's gotten so far. So there's a range there with those two outliers, but... I think out of like the 11 out of the 13 reviews on there were between fives and six and a halfs. So, I don't know, it's got me thinking about game reviews in general and how I listen to a few different podcasts, and most outlets that do numbered reviews kind of want us as consumers of these reviews, I guess in our case occasionally, not very often anymore, they want us to think that like fives and sixes aren't bad scores, and because five, I guess to some places is supposed to be like mediocre or average. It's right in the middle. But when was the last time, when you did look at reviews, when was the last time you looked at a game that got a 7 and were like, oh yeah, let me go get that game that's a 7. I think we've gotten to a point where if a game is like below an 8, and even at times an 8, it's hard to get excited for it if you're just basing that on a review.
I mean, sometimes I don't. This is why I don't like those rating systems like that. Mm-hmm. I prefer a regular straight up review, to a degree. Because now and then you'll get games like Call of Duty. 9.8, best gamer. I don't give a shit about this thing. It's the same garbage as it was last time.
Right.
It's just, all right, we're going to run and gun and shoot people. All right, it's not really evolved a lot.
Yeah, is it doing something as drastically different from other Call of Duty games, just to pick on that series for because it's an easy punching bag, really,
yeah,
is what it is.
It really is. Which is fine. Go for it.
Yeah, this is the low-hanging fruit. It's fine.
The only thing about Call of Duty I have a gripe about is when people are like, yeah, I'm a hardcore gamer. I play Call of Duty.
No, congratulations.
Do you play anything else? No, just a lot of Call of Duty and some basketball games.
Call of Duty.
You're a hardcore gamer, buddy. Woo.
Real hardcore.
I wish one day I could be like you.
I play 2 games a year. Wait, what were we even talking about? Oh, we were talking about...
reviews, I don't take credit.
I wanted to touch on your Call of Duty point, because from game to game, as an outsider looking in, it doesn't seem like Call of Duty is doing much different. It maybe adds some multiplayer stuff. It's got a bare-bones single-player thing that's maybe a little different. But... If the game is pretty typical, like if not a whole lot is changing, like at what point do you then say, okay, well then 9 is just an average score for this Call of Duty game? Like if, and it, on a larger scale, if most games are scoring 8s and 9s or somewhere in between, that kind of becomes average.
Yeah.
Average just kind of applies to your majority. If a majority of your games are 8s and 9s, guess what? Anything below an 8 or a 9 is now below average. So you can't really justify like, oh, this is a 6. It's okay. Well, no, that's well below average. We're basically working like most, like I would say most sites work on a 0 to 10 scale, and we're getting to a point where the lower end of the scale never gets used. You don't see a whole lot of things below sixes or sevens. So, and unless they're like just totally trashing something that is obviously awful because, you know, as a joke or something, because they just feel like trashing something, that lower end of the scale now becomes meaningless. We're basically working on a 5 to 10 scale where if something's a 5, it's garbage. And Chibi Robo is not. So, anyway, I think the whole point of when I was thinking about game reviews in general is so much of it's become about the bottom line, or so much of it is just based on, okay, well, what number did you give it, and does that number justify my opinion of it? People are more looking for that sort of validation. Like, they want to like something, or they already like something, so they want to see it scored according to what they think of it. And reviews are people's opinion of games. So you want, you don't want someone to tell you that something you like is bad. And I think we've gotten far astray from what constitutes a bad score of a game. So, giving Chibi Robo Ziplash 5s and 6s, they're not good scores. That's not the way people have come to consume game reviews. They see a 5 or 6 and like, oh no, this is trash. I'm staying away. I'm telling people, don't stay away from Chibi Robo Ziplash. It's pretty good.
Now about the actual game.
But first,
oh, God, yeah.
Well, one other thing. So one thing about one last gripe that I have with game reviews is they don't typically address the sort of artistic quality.
You know what really grinds my gears?
Stop it. They don't address that artistic quality of game design. A lot of it, they're focused on these very mechanical aspects of it. The visuals, does it look pretty? Controls, do the buttons do what I tell them to do? The sound, replayability, some sort of more abstract things like replayability. I'm not exactly sure what that means. The replayability, I guess, depends mostly on how much you enjoyed it on the first place, right?
Yep.
If you, I mean, we replay Final Fantasy games quite often.
I replay a lot of my games.
Yeah. I don't so much anymore because I buy a lot of them.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. It's mostly because of this podcast. If I didn't do a podcast, I probably wouldn't buy as many games, and I'd probably replay them more often.
Yeah. But again, I'm trying a new game.
Would I be a happier person, though? I'm not sure. Go on. What game are you?
Fire Emblem.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Oh, it's so good.
Are we talking about whether or not you playing buying new games determines whether you're happy or not?
Yeah, I guess we kind of are.
Wow. You were thinking of the wife and kids would determine that. You know, your family.
There's a lot of different aspects of happiness, Wes. Would I find more fulfillment in my gaming hobby?
You think you'd be fulfilled enough
in my
with
gaming
wife and family?
Wes, learn to compartmentalize with me here. Come on, I don't know why that word was so hard to say.
You'd be a happier person if you took speech.
Ah, you asshole.
So it's okay. I took it at elementary school.
I know you did.
My bear sounded like Wears.
I was there.
No, you weren't.
No, I wasn't.
You're like what? How many years older than me?
I'm like 40. I'm your real dad.
You're a real dad. Oh, that's creepy.
A lot of the complaints about Chibi Robo are you? I actually read. Once I saw their bullshit scores, I actually read some people's reviews, and most of the complaints revolve around really similar things. Sluggish controls came up a couple times. That's just flat out wrong. There's nothing wrong with the controls in this game. There's one thing wrong. There's one thing wrong with the controls in this game, and that is, so you of course, I'm gonna have to break down all these controls in order to get to this one specific point, but basically, you have your jump button, you have your whip button, which is just your basic attack, and then you have your charge-up attack. Your charge-up attack will fly farther, and that'll also depend on how many upgrades you've picked up throughout the level, but your charge-up one generally will always go farther. With your regular, just basic whip attack, it damages enemies and can also grapple onto things. You can grapple up onto things in front of you, in back of you, depending on which way you're facing, and you can also go diagonally upwards. Sometimes it's hard to aim the diagonal upwards one because you're pushing with the circle pad, you're also moving. If there was a way you could actually stop and aim that grapple upwards, just for a quick grapple, it would be much more easier. It'd be much more fluid moving through a level. But because you tend to move when you're trying to aim that, it's a little bit cumbersome. That's my only issue. Controls, they're not sluggish. Chibi Robo does not move slowly. He moves at a decent pace. This game does not feel like it's weighed down by anything. Everything feels very fluid. And yeah, there's the controls, other than that, function 100% effectively. There's also like a complaint about the enemies being sluggish in the game. And the enemies do tend to crawl along the ground, but the enemies are not really the primary gameplay here. They serve as brief obstacles, and they're mostly one-hit kill enemies. They're kind of there to break up some space. That's all that's really going on there. Some of them you can bounce off of to get to different areas. One of the other complaints about the game is that the visuals are bland, which, yeah, okay. There's six different worlds, six levels in each world in a boss fight. And the worlds are themed. I just finished up World 2, and actually I was really disappointed when I got to World 2 because it was a fucking desert. Just like in every Mario game since Mario 3, World 2 was a goddamn desert. Anyway, that was the one disappointing part. But within the worlds, the six different stages, they all are very similarly visually themed. So in World 2, everything looks like a desert. There's like pyramids and stuff. Sarcophaguses. Sarcophagi?
Sarcophagi.
Thank you. Sarcophagi, things like that. The setting is in North Africa. So that's just kind of the general aesthetic, the Sahara. Anyway. But within the level, if you were to take a screenshot of like World 1-2 and World 1-3 and show them to me, I might not be able to tell you which one is which. But that's all superficial stuff. That's purely aesthetic. I think that the bigger point that the reviewers are trying to make is that the levels are all very similar in what you're doing in each level. And that's entirely not true. I can't think of one level that I played where I encountered something that's like, oh my god, this is just like the thing I just did in that other level. Granted, I'm only on World... I just finished up World 2. I'm in the middle of the boss fight right now. My 3DS is closed in suspend mode. But you're gonna ruin the boss fight for me, Wes. Thanks. Oh, wait, no, you're good. I already beat the boss. I just remembered.
Okay.
And the boss fights are pretty cool, actually. The two that I've played have actually been really good. I can't remember any particular level that I thought this is a lot like the thing I already did. And they do things in the levels, like they mix up the themes of it. Like some they're very heavy on using your grapple hook to swing on things. There's one level where you're on a skateboard and you have to use your grapple hook to hook onto things and speed yourself up and collect things as you go. There's a level where you're on a minecart. And it's not like a Donkey Kong Country minecart where you're moving really quickly. It's like a slower kind of, like Shovel Knight. There was a thing in Shovel Knight where there was a slower moving thing through some lava. It's kind of like that. And then you're kind of clearing out obstacles and pulling things down with your cord as you go. Basically, the point I'm getting at here is there's enough variety so far to keep things interesting. So it seems, just on my experience with the first third of the game here, that some of these complaints that I'm seeing are just really unfounded. I think they're mistaking bland level aesthetic with bland level design. So far, the level designs have been really, really fun. And there's this one really weird review on US Gamer. Jeremy Parrish at US Gamer did this review, and the first portion of the review was talking about the collecting nature of the game.
I guess the actual level. Do I just walk somewhere? What am I doing?
Hang on a second.
What am I doing?
But in his review, he spent a lot of time focusing on like the sort of consumerism aspect of the game with all the collecting that you do. Specifically, and a couple of reviewers have done this, they spent a lot of time talking about the snacks that you collect. So one of the collectibles in each level is some sort of snack product, and they're actual products in real life. and you give these snacks to non-playable characters throughout the game, and they give you cash rewards. And the cash also effectively is your health in a certain way, because...
kind of like Sonic.
Yeah, it's definitely similar. So basically, when you're running out of the level, you can actually see it as you're playing right now, Wes. In the lower left-hand corner, there you've got a ticker. That's your battery. As you play through the levels, it winds down because you're a robot, and when you're moving around, you're using your battery. It's also going to deplete faster if you take a lot of damage.
Which one's my battery? Lower left corner. I'm dying.
You'll be fine. I've never once have been in danger of timing out of a level.
I don't know where I'm supposed to go at this point.
You're supposed to go up. See that gravel point up there? Use your charge.
How's my charger going to reach that? Okay. Well,
you found it. You found extensions.
Oh, all right. Apparently I found extensions.
So the snacks you give to non-playable characters, and then they kind of give you a brief history of like an interesting fun fact about the Tootsie Pop. Or about some sort of Japanese chips or mixed nuts snack. There's a bunch of different stuff in here. So, the reviewers that I was reading weren't really, like, offended by this. I guess maybe a little bit taken aback, maybe a little bit disturbed by the, like, product placement and consumerism. And it's entirely harmless. It's actually kind of funny to see like these different non-playable toy characters get excited about the different type of snacks they're getting them, and getting really excited about telling you all about the snacks that you're giving them. And it's something that's completely optional. You don't have to do this collecting if you don't want to. I don't know. It was really silly to me to see. I don't know, such a strange reaction to a really minimal part of the game that is not hurting anyone. So I don't know if I ever finished the thought about your money also being your health. I don't think I did. So
probably not, because I distract you.
Yeah, probably.
I do that a lot.
So because I was saying, you can see your health ticking down there. You'll come across places where you can basically plug in and that recharges, but that pulls from your general pool of money that you've collected. It turns that, I guess, cash into voltage. And you can access that voltage from anywhere that there is an outlet on the wall. Use your charge up and ricochet it.
Oh, I can ricochet this shit. Oh, my God.
And there's actually a lot of that happens within the game.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, and it gets decently complex so far in just in World 2. Anyway, so there's like ricocheting, and there's timed jumps that you have to do. And there you go. You got a big old ricochet right there.
That was really cool.
But it feels really good to pull off that kind of stuff. And that cup on the ground is probably really boring. People listen to that coffee cup on the ground.
It's
you
trash.
You can pick that up. Yeah, you take that back to your ship. You turn it into a compactor. It turns it into voltage for you. Anyway. So I talked about the levels and have both of them. And how a lot of them have different structures to them. One of the things that happens, one of the things I saw some complaints about, was that from level to level, you're upgrading your cord, but every time you start a new level, it starts back at zero. And I can see how that would be frustrating, and I think that there could be a fair compromise with this. I can also see how it works into the design of the level. Because as you're going through the level, the obstacles that you're trying to move through get further and further apart, and it makes more use of the extension of your cord. And it'd be tough to design a level at the very start makes use of the full length of the cord that you've been building the whole time. I think a fair way to compromise something like this is to carry maybe some of it over to the next level, or maybe like have the cord reset every time you enter a new world, something like that. But I don't think it's broken the way it is. Entering a new level and starting from scratch doesn't feel unfair. It's just a part of the game that when you're looking at it from a design point and how you're going to be laying out your next level, it just makes more sense to start from the beginning, because Wes, as you're seeing right now, if your extension cord gets really long, you have to see it bounce around before you can finally retract it. And if you could you imagine trying to do that at the very beginning of a level, just trying to get through some basic obstacles? Oh, yeah,
that would drive me insane.
Anyway. So I don't know. I think they use the whip and the grapple in really cool ways. They set up some really cool obstacles. This game, I think, is definitely worth a shot. I think it's got a lot to offer. The one really big thing that I have a complaint about this in this game is something that also a lot of people are complaining about. And I think this is probably the aspect that sets people off the most about this game, and that is the roulette wheel. So when you enter a new world, you don't play through stages 1 through 6 in order. So you, of course, start with 1, and then when you beat 1, you have to spin this roulette wheel. And the roulette wheel will indicate how many spaces you're going to move to the next level. So you spin the wheel, you land on a 1, you move forward 1 onto level 1-2. However, on that wheel, there's also like a 2 and a 3. So if you spin the wheel, land on the 3, you'll skip over 1-2, go to 1-3. It doesn't really affect the way you're progressing through the game, because the difficulty never gets really very high. You're not going to notice a big spike in difficulty going skipping over 1-2 and going into 1-3. The game isn't built that way. But what it does do is that the levels are in a loop. So if you're on 1-6 and rolled a 1, you would go back to 1-1, and it loops around like that. So conceivably, if you're not getting very good rolls with this roulette wheel, you could be replaying a level. Like if you were on 1-5 and you'd already played and beaten 1-1 and you rolled a 2, it would send you back to 1-1, and you would have to play it again before you were able to roll the wheel to get into a new level. That's frustrating. It's never actually happened to me intentionally or unintentionally, like I say. I've never unintentionally landed on a level that I didn't want to go to, because basically the way this roulette wheel is rolled out is half of it moves you one space. And if you're just moving one space the entire time, you're playing through all the levels in sequence, and you don't have to worry about having to replay levels in order to get another spin with the wheel.
Why is there a smiley face on 1-3?
There's a smiley face on 1-3 because there's a non-playable character there that will buy your snacks off of you.
Yeah.
So, and 1-3, or is it 1-2? One of them is one of my favorite levels so far. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The roulette wheel will sometimes force you to replay a level that you've already beaten that maybe you don't want to play again, which is bullshit, but it's also really easy to avoid. And also, at the end of level, Wes, you noticed at the end of the level there are like those things you have to whip at, and there are 3 different ones floating around. If you hit the smallest one, you'll get more spins at the wheel, you get more chances to actually move to a space you want to move to. But if you're always aiming just to move one space forward, it's never an issue, because I've played through, like I said before, the first 2 worlds of the game, and it's always very easy just to move one space forward and play the levels in sequence. So they give you ways out of this. It's just a really weird way of selecting your next level. It's not a great way to do it. I don't agree with the design choice to make that your way of progressing, but it's also not going to break the game and force you to play the same stuff over and over again unless you're really not paying attention. And then once you beat the boss of a world, you can select any level of that world that you feel like. So anyway, this game is good. And I think it's worth a shot. It's getting kind of a bum rap right now for some reason. I'm not exactly sure what that is. But anyway, let's take one last quick break and then come back with Wes's book report. So before we get to your book report, one quick interjection that I want to put in here, because you're playing through 1-2, which is a good level. You ran into the alien baby.
Yep.
And the alien baby, I've never done this, so a lot of this is just speculation. The alien baby, you want to get back to its parents, and there's like a landing area in each level, and he'll appear sporadically in different levels. I haven't yet figured out a pattern to what level he shows up in. So this alien baby, you pick it up with your cord, and you kind of have to whip it around to get like up a cliff. You can't use your cord to grapple while you're carrying it with your cord. So, and basically what you have to do is take it back to that landing site, maneuvering your way around obstacles in different ways, and then you have to twirl it around in your helicopter lasso type thing. And when you do that, it will sing. And I guess, what I guess is when it sings in that particular area, it calls its parents by doing so. And the parents, I suppose, will come pick it up and take it away, and you get some sort of reward for it. I've never seen it happen. Because the first time I ran into the baby and I kind of guessed on what I had to do, I picked it up, I got it back close to its landing site, and I jumped, I was twirling around, I was helicoptering, and it was singing. The parents didn't arrive. I kind of cut it short. I wasn't able to do it for long enough. So then I quickly pressed the button again to try to extend it, but I was standing on the ground. And when you're standing on the ground, you don't do the propeller maneuver, you just do your regular whip. So I flung the baby off into oblivion.
Kicked the baby.
It fell down a pit and died.
Kicked the baby.
I murdered this baby.
Did right now as well.
Yeah, you threw the baby right into a horde of enemies. So the baby, yeah, we're both official baby murderers. I mean, they're not human babies. It's not that big a deal.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's going to cry over a dead alien baby.
No, I just killed myself. Yeah, you jumped down right there.
Into oblivion I go.
But let's get to your book report. Let's talk about that.
Oh, my book report. Yeah, I am going to finally.
Yeah.
Because we skipped a mini show last month.
You've probably read like 5 books since then.
One? Almost 2?
Okay.
I slowed down a little bit on my books.
I overshot it.
I got a lot of books I've read. So, I mean, I got some stuff in the bank.
It's not a competition, all right?
Well, technically, you read a book too. It's called Phoenix Wright.
It's true. Dual Destiny. I've read 3 chapters of that book. Yes.
They were very long, extensive.
Oh my god!
Chapters with no real good payout. The book I chose this time is book 1 of the Reckoner series called Steelheart.
Yes,
it was written by a guy called Brandon Sanderson. And Brandon Sanderson is an author who is very well known for his books that have... He writes a lot of fantasy books.
That's how I know him.
Oh, yeah. Shut up, John. Peanut Gallery.
How's it feel, motherfucker?
But he's well known for having unique magic systems in his books. Like, for instance, the Mistborn series, where the magic is based on ingesting different types of metals to do different things. There is, what other ones did he write? There was the Legion series, where the main character is a genius, but he has split personalities for every aspect of...
You've talked about that one.
I've talked about that one. Yeah. Every aspect of his education, like if he learns a language and needs somebody, he imagines a new aspect that is his linguist. He has an aspect that is his, like, combat dude. He has a, blah, 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 blah. He has different aspects. And he has to deal with them in his everyday life. He has unique ways of introducing new rules to the typical stuff. Because if you read a basic fantasy novel, it's got like magic. They may have some kind of interesting thing about it. But Brandon Sanderson's really got an interesting twist to it. This book makes me think of a couple of different things. Outside of the magic system, this is something, a different part of it. But this book, the Reckoner series, is a very interesting book to me because it... makes me think of, one, Infamous, the video game series Infamous, and it also makes me think of Megamind, the movie with Will Ferrell.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. It was good.
I liked Megamind. Yeah. It was very enjoyable. Pretty much the premise of this book is one day a red planet thing rose into the sky, and people eventually started being called a calamity. And then about a year later, people started developing superpowers. But the interesting twist is this, the people developing superpowers are using them for evil. Mm. There is no good person, and they're basically called epics. And then epic powers are going to vary, and some will have multiple, some will just have one or two. It's going to vary. But generally, they're evil, and they do horrible, terrible shit. The book starts with a, I'm going to give away the beginning, whoop-de-doo. The book starts with the main character telling a story about when he was a kid in the bank, and a epic walked in and just started killing people for fun, for no reason. And he watches the bank people get massacred, and Steelheart, the main enemy of this book, comes in, kills the dude, and then kills the main character's father, and the book is about this guy getting his revenge on him. And later accomplishes that with the help of a group called the Reckoners, which are normal people whose job is to go out and kill epics, trying to put an end to their evil reign or whatever. It's interesting the way that the book goes about this. The other things about the epics is that nobody knows where how they got their powers, and they seem to defy physics and logic and blah, 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 blah. But the other general rule of it is every epic has their own weakness, and it's going to vary to the individual. I'll give away one, because it's in the beginning of the book. The epic Fortunity. They all are also very bizarre. Fortunity dresses in a red pinstripe suit.
Of course.
In a suit, pretty much.
Like you do.
Like you do. And his power is he foresees if anybody's trying to kill him, and so he's able to avoid that kind of stuff. So he's difficult to kill. That particular epic's weakness revealed very early in the book, because this is where you meet the Reckoners the first time. They're trying to kill this guy. And his weakness is his powers generally don't work if he's attracted to the person. So, females.
Yeah. Find a lady killer.
Find a lady killer. And so you meet the main character, and it's got fun little quirks here and there, and it's interesting the way the book goes. Story-wise, the government has fallen, cities have fallen, epics will claim territories for their own. This is generally takes place in Chicago, which eventually gets renamed Newcago. It's in a perpetual state of night.
That seems like a bizarre way to rename it.
It's very weird. They're very like, eccentric.
It wasn't Old Cago before.
Yeah, it's New Cago. Yes. But that's another weird thing with the epics. It's very eccentric. They wear capes and they give themselves weird names like Steelheart and Fortunity and what other ones were there? They're weird stuff to them. But New Cago's in a perpetual state of darkness due to an epic called...
Does every city just become new something? Do we have...
No, it's just what Steelheart named it.
Des Moines, Iowa. We have New Moines, Iowa. Newaukee.
New Mexico. But, the place is perpetually night because of an epic called Night Wielder who can make everything night and... walks around through walls and...
Does he stop the earth from turning? Is that what happens?
No, he's called Night Wielder, so he blocked out the sun. It's all night there.
Oh, alright.
It's fun. It's got quirky little things.
Alright. With some sort of, like, heavenly body he summons that...
That's his power. It defies logic. That's the thing about epics. They're not supposed to make sense.
Okay.
Premises of the book.
Is his weakness science?
I'll give away his weakness, so blur out this next second. His weakness is actually UV light.
Interesting.
He's perpetually transparent, and he can walk through walls and people can't hurt him because he's transparent. But his weakness is if he's exposed to UV light, he becomes solid and can be hurt.
Gets a really bad sunburn, yeah.
Yeah, super bad. He's a ginger? No. He's actually an Asian guy wearing a black suit.
Of course.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay.
They're all a little quirky.
Well, it sounds entertaining enough.
Yeah, it's a fun book. The other thing about it is that the city is drastically different, and they continue that in book two, Firefight. Newcago is a city made... Everything got turned to steel. So the light bulbs and lights are all steel. The buildings are all steel. Doors are sealed shut because they're solid steel, and that's one of the powers of Steelheart. You can turn non-living things into steel.
Hmm.
You know, and then in book two, he goes to... I forget what city they actually go to. But The city is sunken.
New Ronto?
No, the city is sunken.
New Lando.
And so everybody lives on rooftops and everything like that, because the city is actually mostly underwater, because the epic there that runs that city, it controls water. And so she, like, sunk the city. Mm. It's all drastic environments. It's very... it's just interesting the way he goes about these sort of things. It's an entertaining reading. The main character has issues with metaphors. So you get quirky metaphors that are very bizarre throughout the entire book.
Hmm. All right, cool.
Yeah, it's a fun little... Yeah. I like it. Go ahead and read it. Read a lot of stuff about Bryan Singerson. I really like the guy.
Do you think it would make a better TV series? Or like Netflix series or movie?
Ooh, that's tough. Because it could be a... It could be a good movie,
mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it would also make a good TV series, because they can introduce new epics and they have to deal with on a weekly basis or whatever.
Right.
So they totally could do that.
Hmm.
They're not going to, because there's a lot of good books out there they need to make movies out of.
I know.
And then they pick really crappy ones. They're like, here's this. That doesn't make any freaking sense.
I know. Maybe one day they'll run out of comic books and go back to book books.
Book books. Nah, I really like to see this as a TV series or a movie. It would be really good. Or both.
Why not?
Have a TV series with a movie.
Yeah.
Here and there. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, Marvel does the exact same thing. They got TV shows and they got movies.
Yeah. Why not?
Anyway.
You'd be entertained. So that's that. It's a brief little thing. I'll have more in-depth review on the next book that's I'm going to be talking about next month.
You went on for 15, 20 minutes. I think that's solid.
Yeah, but nothing really in-depth or in-detailed about the book and everything. But, the next book I'm going to be talking about is by Django Wexler, which is a guy I've never heard of. I only read the one book by him. It's called A Thousand Names. I'm starting book two here soon. But, yeah, I like it.
Cool.
It's pretty good. So I'll talk about that one next.
All right. Any other games or topics you want to throw out there before we close it out?
I mean, we're hour 20 in.
Yeah, so I think that's the end.
Yeah, I think we're good.
So next week is the Super Nintendo show. Ryan will probably be back for that one, but I think we might.
Hopefully,
you might not Communist. Be. You might not be back.
I may not be back. I got my mom's wedding.
Yeah, I think we might shoot for a Tuesday or a Thursday.
I'm walking her down the aisle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
It's gonna be good.
You got the right shoes. You got everything.
Oh, I need some Tucks. They supply the shoes. Okay.
I mean, some places.
I mean, my choice. I just wear Converse.
Right.
I've done that. I've seen that at weddings where they
keep it classy.
Where the bridal party had all Converse. Mm. It was really weird. The grooms wore blue vests and blue cons. And the brides wore red dresses with red cons.
Mm.
It's pretty cool.
At Jeremy's wedding, I was directly in the sun. I was pissed. The whole time. They were because at the rehearsal, they were like, oh yeah, we're going to set up over here. And there's this tree. And at the time of the day, we've already looked at it. So everyone will be in shade. And then when it came time to do it, nope, sure wasn't.
Yeah, that's one of the pros of outdoor weddings.
Yeah.
There's too many things that can go wrong with outdoor weddings. It's like you're asking for trouble. You're I dare you to ruin my magical day.
I don't know how you mismanage something like that. The sun is there and it's going to be there at the same time tomorrow. It doesn't change that much from day to day.
No, Jeremy. He's not better.
Well, the point is, you said shoes. It reminded me of it because we ended up wearing these really tough brown leather
shoes. So your feet were hot?
My feet were burning. I was so goddamn pissed the entire time.
And then the bridesmaid fainted.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I was too self-involved without how my feet were. I didn't notice
that. They didn't pronounce you my wife, and they started walking down the aisle, and then the maid of honor kind of fainted.
Oh.
And it was really funny because Jeremy and Natalie kind of played it off really well. They're like, oh shit, hope she's okay. No, they got her. Hi, how are you doing? And they just turned to other people. And just continue on the wedding. They're just like, don't let this ruin it. Just go. She's fine. Don't worry about it. Give her some orange juice.
That seems like a pattern of behavior. And I hope he's listening. that seems like a pattern of behavior at his wedding where they don't give a fuck about how other people are feeling.
Wow.
I hope his wife's listening too. Anyway, that's a good place to end, right? So, Super Nintendo show next week, and then we'll wrap it all up this month with the official show at the end of the month. So, we'll have a lot of new games to talk about. We might even talk about Chibi Robo a little bit more. Maybe by then I'll be on board with everyone else and just shit all over the game. Because maybe it just turns to complete garbage.
Like, but it just takes a 180?
Yeah, maybe it lasts like three worlds, and then the last three worlds are the same as the first two.
So Chibi Robo makes me think of that, of another Robo-ish game you tried a while ago. I can't remember what it is. I thought it was like a dog thing.
Nintendogs?
No. Yeah, totally. Chibi Robo makes me think of Nintendogs. Yeah.
What dog thing did I have?
I don't know. I vaguely remember it. It was something Duck Robo. Hunt. It was a very weird, long Robo name.
Solo to Robo. Red the Hunter. Yes. That I never really got very far in that game. That was when the DS was like the zombie handheld, where every 6 months there was like another wave of three or four games that like reminded you, hey, this thing still exists. Yeah, the 3DS, I think, was already out at that point.
Yeah, that was weird.
Anyway, yeah, that was a strange game.
Yeah. Next mini show, I'll probably talk about Fire Emblem.
Nice.
It's gonna be good.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm super pumped.
Briefly. Yes.
Before we close the show.
Why not? Let's just go.
Give me top three characters I must have and must use extensively.
That aren't, like, your main, like, your lord characters?
No, like, individuals. Like, hey, well, use this person.
Okay, so you got... Krom is one of your lord characters. He's your lord character. And then you also got your main character, your avatar character. And those...
No, like, you know...
You're going to have to use them. But, like, as far as, like,
Non-main characters, and you go, this guy's really good, use him.
I really like Tharja. She's a mage.
Okay.
She's a dark mage. She's probably one of the first dark mages that I used extensively throughout.
So they actually use dark mages in this game, opposed to the other Fire Emblems, or it just kind of was a thing in the background. And you're like, I wish I had one of those.
Yeah, dark mages. You can,
like in Path of Radiant, Radiant Dawn, where you only could do it if you beat the game two times.
Oh,
and
yeah, that was weird.
You get the one guy really late.
Yeah, Peleus.
He only has the one form, so he's kind of shit anyways.
I also like Sully. She is a cavalier. If I had to pick one more, who do I end up using a lot? I mean, the first
I never
person...
was a big fan of cavaliers. I don't know why. I just always thought they were very boring.
And see, that's one of the things about like Fire Emblem games. Like,
They're very useful because they get attacked and move and everything like that, but I just thought they were boring.
In the GBA games, they're like the backbone of your entire army, but once you start getting into the Radiant series, they become... less and less this important character or this important class, and they start mixing in the other classes a little bit better. If you're not wanting a cavalier, I also like Sumia. She is a Pegasus Knight, and Pegasus Knights have these really cool skills. If you take them up to Dark Flyer, which you should do, which is basically a Falcon Knight, but the horse is black. Dark Flyer, at a certain level, it will learn the skill where if it kills an enemy, it gets to move again.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really awesome skill.
Are there any crazy skills like in the Path of Radiance or Radiant Dawns, like Vanguard and shit like that going on? Or is it more like the GBA games in that aspect?
I think it's a little bit more about... There's no really overpowering skills. I think Sol and Luna might be in there. But it's hard to remember all the specific skills. Arms Thrift is a really good one of the characters you have to use is Donald. He starts out as a villager. He's kind of like your pupils in Sacred Stones.
Or what was his name? I forget the kid with the axe.
Ross,
who I always took into Berserker, and he was an absolute brute at that point.
Donald starts as a villager, and you can basically make him any class you want, but he maxes out stats really easily. He's one of the easiest characters. Like
make him?
I downloaded some of the DLC and I took him to I think it's called Dark Knot or Dreadknot, something like that. It's a DLC exclusive class. You have to get a special item from DLC, and it uses like swords and it's hard to remember, axes and maybe some magic. It uses a lot of different stuff.
Oh shit!
Yeah, he's a really great character.
Does the DLC cost extra?
I think like that particular one was like $1.50 or something.
That's not that big of a deal. Yeah. I'll pay $1.50 for that. Go for it.
Yeah, there's different DLC packs, and like some of them like they're $3 and you get three stages for it, something like that. One of the DLC packs that's an absolute necessary is one. It's a pack that comes with a map called Exponential Experience. It's really great for grinding. It's really easy to grind characters up in that particular map. That's one that is definitely a must buy. And the DLC ones you can actually access really early on in the game. So if I think you only have to get like 5 or 6 missions in before you can go to like this special portal and play any of your DLC maps. So that's a really good one. Like if you want to experiment with different characters or level them up or catch characters who are falling behind up with your other characters or work on supports, it's also a really great way to do that. Because it's just like there are enemies that you fight in the game or in that particular map, and it's almost automatically a level up every time you kill one.
Oh, shit.
So Donal is really good. Sully is really good. Sumia is really good. But if you don't want to use like a mounted unit, if you want to pass on Sully, Vike, he's your axe wielder. He'd be the guy you take up to Berserker. He's really good. He's a little obnoxious, but he's good. There's not really
any good like assassin class or. There's not really like Volk. Volk got really cool. Soth, I wish was good, but he got really annoying.
Soth by the end of the game, like he starts out, he's like your Seth of the game. He's your character that's already class changed at the beginning.
Yeah.
And even though he gets another class change later, he never, like his stats never really seem to keep up with everyone else.
I really liked those assassin classes. I mean, I wish there was more of it.
Yeah, I can't remember who's your assassin in the game. I mean, you do also have, like in Sacred Stones, you have your branching character class paths. So you can take, like if you have a sword master and you want to take them to assassin, you can do that.
Hmm.
And there's, who's the Myrmidon and the sword master in this game? I can't remember now. Anyway, it's been a little while. And then, of course, you know, you have, like, your sniper characters, and they're always really good. That kind of stuff. Anyway, before we turn this into the Fire Emblem podcast,
yep,
let's close it out there. So, till next time, everybody.
Boom.